We'll have a wonderful day.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed the leaders of the Group of Seven industrial powers via video conference on Tuesday, and thanking them for their support and pleading for more help, especially financially. Following the virtual conference, the G7 leaders pledged in a statement that they will stand firmly with Ukraine for as long as it takes. Russia's deputy foreign minister said Tuesday that Russia will respond to the West's growing involvement in Ukraine, though he acknowledged direct conflict with NATO is not in Moscow's interest. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said on Wednesday his government was considering sending military trainers to Ukraine. He told a broadcaster, Channel 7, he had spoken to President Volodymyr Zelensky Tuesday about what further contributions Australia could make to Ukraine's war effort against Russia. Albanese said that he conveyed the condolences of the Australian people for the innocent victims, adding that this is a fight not just about Ukraine's sovereignty, this is a fight about the international rule of law. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says a military alliance will go ahead with planned nuclear exercises next week. Stoltenberg said Tuesday that it is important to do this despite rising tensions over the war in Ukraine and President Vladimir Putin's insistence that he is not bluffing about using all available means to defend Russia's territory. King Charles will be crowned May 6th at Westminster Abbey. Buckingham Palace says that the ceremony will embrace the past but look to the future. Charles plans a slimmed-down monarchy, and there's speculation the coronation will be shorter and less extravagant than the three-hour ceremony that installed his mother, Queen Elizabeth, in 1953. This is VOA News. Chile's president, Gabriel Boric, met Tuesday with the visiting South Korean Prime Minister, Han Duck-soo, who is touring South America looking for support for the South Korean city of Busan to be the site of the World Expo in 2030. Bilateral agreements in the areas of cooperation and sustainable mining and agricultural projects were signed by both men outside Chile's presidential palace. Duck-soo will next visit Uruguay and Argentina. U.S. President Joe Biden believes that three members of the Los Angeles City Council should resign after leaked audio recordings revealed they made racist remarks, according to a White House spokesperson. Tuesday night's regularly scheduled City Council meeting was packed with protesters, also calling for resignations. So far, the recordings have resulted in the Los Angeles City Council president taking a leave of absence, a union leader stepping down, and numerous calls for resignations. The audio first reported on Reddit captures the former L.A. City Council President Nuri Martinez discussing redistricting with other Latino city leaders when she speaks of the black son of a white city council member, Michael Bonin, saying that there's even a white guy with the little black kid who's misbehaving. The kid's bouncing off the effing walls on the floor, practically taking it over. There's nothing you can do to control him. And they would translate to, he looks like a little monkey. Bonin called for Martinez and others to step down. Instead, she apologized, saying she's taking a leave of absence. Jurors in Connecticut deliberated for a second full day in the Alex Jones Newtown trial. A Connecticut jury deliberated without reaching a verdict in its efforts to decide on how much conspiracy theorist Alex Jones should pay for spreading the lie that the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting was staged by crisis actors. 26 people died in that massacre. The panel asked to revisit the testimony of one plaintiff, William Sherlock, who has lost his wife. Jones said his company, Free Speech Systems, were found liable for damages last year to 15 plaintiffs for broadcasting a conspiracy theory that no children died in the shooting and that the victim's relatives are part of an elaborate hoax. Rights groups voiced alarm on Tuesday about the extent of an Iranian crackdown on a Kurdish-populated city that has become a flashpoint for a nationwide protest that have now lasted more than three weeks. Iran's clerical authorities have been shaken since mid-September by the protests that erupted after the death of Mahsa Amini, a 22-year-old Iranian of Kurdish origin who had been arrested by the morality police. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, October 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Russia launches fresh attacks on Ukraine as NATO warns of a, quote, determined response, unquote, to any attack on its infrastructure.
We will take further steps to strengthen our resilience and protect our critical infrastructure. Any deliberate attack against allies' critical infrastructure would be met with a united and determined response.
The UN calls for immediate debt relief for 54 countries, with nearly half in sub-Saharan Africa.
The United Nations Development Programme warned on Tuesday that a serious debt crisis is now taking hold in poorer parts of the world. The UNDP estimated that 54 countries would need immediate debt relief.
And NASA says a spacecraft that plowed into a small asteroid millions of miles away last month succeeded in shifting its orbit. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russian forces have carpeted Ukraine with a fresh barrage of missiles and munition-carrying drones. The bombardment came a day after strikes across the country killed at least 19 people and knocked out power. The UN Human Rights Office says the particularly shocking attacks could amount to war crimes. This as NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg warned that any attack on infrastructure critical to the NATO military alliance would trigger a, quote, united and determined response, unquote. Stoltenberg told a news conference that NATO allies were increasing security around key installations after attacks on gas pipelines running under the Baltic Sea. He said that NATO was closely monitoring Russia's nuclear forces and had not seen any changes in their posture.
We will take further steps to strengthen our resilience and protect our critical infrastructure. Any deliberate attack against allies' critical infrastructure would be met with a united and determined response. President Putin's veiled nuclear threats are dangerous and irresponsible. Russia knows that the nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought. We are closely monitoring Russia's nuclear forces. We have not seen any changes in Russia's posture, but we remain vigilant. Ukraine has the momentum and continues to make significant gains. While Russia is increasingly resorting to horrific and indiscriminate attacks on civilians and critical infrastructure, and we need to ramp up production of ammunition and weapons to both ensure the deterrence on defense of our own allies, NATO allies, but also to have enough to continue for the long haul to provide support to Ukraine.
That's NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister said on Tuesday the Kremlin will respond to the West's growing involvement in the Ukrainian conflict. This as Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Russian military doctrine allows for only the defensive use of nuclear weapons. Lavrov said that Moscow was open to talks with the West on the Ukrainian war, but had yet to receive any serious proposal to negotiate. Laila Sharok-Shahi of Reuters reports.
Ukrainians picked through the rubble of their homes on Tuesday morning after a barrage of Russian missiles shook cities across the country, prompting an immediate response from the West. Russia has vowed to respond to the West's growing involvement in the Ukraine conflict after Washington pledged more military aid for Kyiv, although reiterated direct conflict with NATO is not in Moscow's interest. Cruise missiles rained down on targets in Ukraine on Monday, tearing into intersections and parks. Emergency service officials said at least 19 people have been killed and over 100 are wounded. Russia says the attacks, the biggest aerial assaults on cities since the beginning of the war, were retaliation for what Moscow called a Ukrainian attack on a strategic bridge in Crimea. Ukraine has said it needs to strengthen its air defense, with emergency services putting all of Ukraine on alert for more missile strikes on Tuesday. U.S. President Joe Biden promised advanced air defense systems to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. The White House added Biden and a group of seven world leaders will hold a virtual meeting on Tuesday to discuss their commitment to support Ukraine. In Zelensky's late-night address, he vowed to restore everything that was damaged.
I am near the facilities of the Shevchenko University, which will soon celebrate its 190th anniversary. They are damaged now by this Russian strike, but we will restore everything.
He said that they were deliberately timed to kill people and knock out Ukraine's power grid. His prime minister said 11 major infrastructure targets were hit in 8 regions, leaving parts of the country with no electricity, water or heat.
That's Leila Sharok-Shahi of Reuters. According to the latest assessment by the Institute for Study of War, Russian President Vladimir Putin claimed Moscow's latest attacks were in retaliation for Kyiv's strike on the Kerch Strait Bridge. The organization added that it was also likely, in part, to curry favor with, quote, pro-war, unquote, factions. The ISW's latest assessment adds that Ukrainian forces have likely liberated over 200 square kilometers in the West Luhansk region as Russian forces continued unsuccessful attempts to regain recently lost territory in northwestern Kherson region. Craig Albert is professor of political science and graduate director of the Master of Arts in Intelligence and Security Studies at Augusta University in Georgia. He discusses with Flashpoint Ukraine host Steve Miller what Russia's recent series of attacks means for the conflict moving forward.
Clearly, it shows that Ukraine's counteroffensive has taken the advantage now, and Russia, and specifically President Putin, realizes that they are losing ground and that they are losing the war. So in order to try to turn things around, they're trying to just devastate the civilian infrastructure by those attacks. So I think this is very clearly, we can interpret it in the United States and in NATO countries, that Putin understands he's losing, and this is a desperate measure to try to take the offensive back on the part of Russia.
Is it turning the tide in terms of the war back in Russia's favor? Or some analysts have said that the attacks on civilian structures in Ukraine have also been designed to kind of bolster the domestic Russian audience's support of the war.
Right. So I think it could be targeting the domestic audience of Russia, but I'm not sure. It's way too early to tell if it's having any significant effect on that. Right now, the mobilization for Russia that was rolled out so poorly seems to still be owning the news cycle in Russia, and more people are focusing on that rather than any attacks that Russia has against the civilian infrastructure of Ukraine. For the other point, has it started to shift at all? I think it's also too early to tell if Russia is gaining the momentum back. We know that there were some communication issues from Ukraine from some of these attacks, especially the first day of the attacks, and that resulted in operational and tactical pauses in some areas of the counteroffensive by Ukraine's military. Those were quickly remedied, and it doesn't look like they have been totally blacked out, the communication, yet. However, that is something that Ukraine has to be prepared for, that some of their internet communications and other signals that they use might be wiped out in the future as a result of Russia targeting. So that could, if you lose communication, you're not going to be able to have a coordinated counteroffensive, which therefore gives the advantage back to Russia. So that's something that Ukraine needs to be prepared for. And I'm sure that they're taking all precautions for this, especially with their allies and the United States as well.
Craig, as you continue to observe what's taking place on the ground, do you see any potential signs that this could expand into a greater contest between Moscow and the West?
I think it depends on the status of President Putin's rationality at the time. I think for sure Putin understands that this is a coordinated defense of Ukraine by NATO, and that NATO and especially the United States are definitely providing the arms. So in President Putin's mind, the West is already at war against Russia. He doesn't want a full kinetic all-out war against the West. He knows he will lose that. So he's likely to up the ante by strategic cyber attacks. I think we saw some of these this weekend on some banking websites in the United States that look like they come from somebody in the state of Russia. So I would look for something more cyber or information oriented from Russia. If he escalates too far, and I think he understands this, I still see him as a very rational actor, even if, you know, one disagrees with his logic or with his battlefield techniques or tactics. He still seems to be rational in what he's doing, at least from the limited information we have. And he understands, and his commanders and, you know, his cabinet understand they can't win an all-out kinetic war against the West. So I think you're likely to see him posture for some kinetic operations, maybe posture his nuclear defense forces a little bit, move them around, see what happens with the West, see what happens with a combination of efforts to see how the United States and NATO will act. And then he'll recalculate and probably back down.
That's Craig Albert, professor of political science and graduate director of Master of Arts in Intelligence and Security Studies at Augusta University in Georgia. He was speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine's host, Steve Miller. A new report warns that in cities worldwide, China has opened dozens of, quote, overseas police service centers, unquote, some of which blackmail criminal suspects into returning home to face charges in breach of globally accepted extradition laws. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, some fear the networks could target political dissidents as well.
A video produced in 2020 by the Li Shui City Prosecutor's Office in China. Local Chinese associations in Spain have tracked down a suspect wanted for environmental pollution back home. At a so-called Overseas Police Service Center in Madrid, he is questioned remotely by police in China. Sitting alongside them is a representative of the suspect's family. The prosecutor's video says the suspect was persuaded to return home to face charges. It is a disturbing new tactic, says Laura Half, a co-author of the report from the human rights group Safeguard Defenders.
Which basically means like threatening, harassing family members, relatives back home to have the so-called fugitive, the person abroad, voluntarily, as they call it, return to China.
Spain confirmed it is investigating the incident. Chinese authorities boast that between April 2021 and July 2022, they persuaded over 230,000 Chinese nationals, mostly living in Southeast Asia, to return home to face criminal proceedings. The report says China has opened at least 54 police service centres on five continents, according to freely available official documents. Three are listed in Britain, including this address in North London. The businesses operating here denied any links to the Chinese government. They declined an interview with VOA. Most of the local Chinese community told VOA they did not know about the overseas police centres and did not want to be interviewed on camera.
The Chinese regime is becoming increasingly brazen. Its institutions increasingly brazen in pursuing this illegal means across the globe and not even hiding it very well. I mean, equally worrying is the fact that democratic governments are apparently not very aware or even concerned about this happening on their soil in violation of their territorial sovereignty.
The British government told VOA that any foreign country operating on UK soil must abide by UK law, but did not confirm whether it was investigating. Fin Lau knows well the long reach of the Chinese Communist Party. As a leader of the 2019 Hong Kong protests against Beijing, he was sought by police and fled to Britain. Then in 2020, on a street close to his London home, he was attacked by three masked men who he is convinced were working for the Chinese government.
I don't really feel safe in London, especially after the physical or near-death assault in London. Because, well, for years we have many different Hong Kong and Chinese dissidents being followed or assaulted by the Chinese Communist Party by different means.
In an email to VOA, the Chinese embassy in London said the Safeguard Defenders report is rife with speculation and lies, adding that China fully respects judicial sovereignty.
Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Thank you, Henry. And the United Nations Development Programme said on Tuesday that 54 countries, with nearly half in sub-Saharan Africa, need immediate debt relief to avoid more extreme poverty. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
The United Nations Development Programme warned on Tuesday that a serious debt crisis is now taking hold in poorer parts of the world. In a report, the UNDP estimated that 54 countries, with nearly half in sub-Saharan Africa, need immediate debt relief to avoid even more extreme poverty and give them a chance of dealing with climate change. The countries account for more than half of the world's poorest people. A serious debt crisis is unfolding, the report said, and the likelihood of a worsening outlook is high. The warning comes as the International Monetary Fund and World Bank hold meetings in Washington this week. That's amid rising global recession worries and a crop of debt crises in countries ranging from Sri Lanka and Pakistan to Chad, Ethiopia and Zambia. The UNDP's administrator, Achim Steiner, urged a string of measures. They include writing off debt and offering wider relief to a greater number of countries. The report also called for a recalibration of the G20-led common framework. It's the plan designed to help countries, pushed into financial trouble by the global health crisis, restructure their debt. Only Chad, Ethiopia and Zambia have used it so far. The UNDP's proposals include expanding the common framework's eligibility to include all heavily indebted countries, and for any debt payments to be automatically suspended during the process.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. In other news, NASA says a spacecraft that plowed into a small harmless asteroid millions of miles away last month succeeded in shifting its orbit. The space agency announced the results of the test Tuesday. NASA attempted the first test of its kind 2 weeks ago to see if a killer rock could be nudged out of Earth's way. The DARTH spacecraft carved a crater into the asteroid, hauling debris out into space and creating a comet-like trail of dust and rubble. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. And as Zimbabwe joins the rest of the world in commemorating International Day of the Girl Child, there are increasing calls for government to adopt measures to ensure girls remain in school and reach their full potential. As Rutendo Mawere reports from Harare, one part of that is providing menstrual supplies.
For Camila Mutima, providing menstrual supplies would be a step toward uplifting girls in Zimbabwe. Mutima says lack of sanitary ware is a barrier to schoolgirls like her, who sometimes are forced to skip school.
I don't even think that there should be a price pegged on sanitary ware. Menstruation isn't a choice. If a person doesn't get assistance on such issues like sanitary hygiene, it might cause a lot of health issues. They should issue subsidies to people who manufacture sanitary ware so that it's provided for free.
Some private organizations are working to provide reusable menstrual pads to poorer children, but Mutima says this does not ease the burden.
We need to use disposable pads instead of using reusable sanitary ware, because the time that you use to wash that and the soap, you also need money to buy the soap to make sure that that thing is clean. You also need water to make sure that the material is clean. And regarding our situation in Zimbabwe, sometimes we've got water, sometimes we don't have water, sometimes we have money for soap, sometimes we don't have money for soap.
Chipo Masbanda is a university student in Harare. Masbanda says coming from an impoverished rural family, pads are unaffordable.
The issue of sanitary ware, I think we have to be given it for free because it's not even affordable. Some of us, we come from different backgrounds where we cannot gets money.
Yolanda Nyatanga is a social work student in Harare. She started the organization Youth Inspire to distribute sanitary ware to rural girls and those from poor suburbs in Harare.
Most of the population here in Zimbabwe is comprised of those that are not employed. The cheapest package cost $1. So for a girl child to access sanitary pads at $1 per packet, it is difficult. And our parents cannot even afford to buy one for us. So I would suggest that the government would assist in making it possible for us to access sanitary pads for free, just as the way we are even accessing condoms for free.
This is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
Athletes are turning their GPS-tracked routes into large-scale art on top of city maps. VOA's Michelle Quinn caught up with one of them.
Most runners think about pace, the distance they cover. Lenny Mon is focused on the image he will run today.
I'm essentially using the streets of San Francisco as my canvas, and my sweat is my paintbrush, if you will.
Around the world, people record their daily walks, runs, bike rides, with devices equipped with location tracking software, which relies on GPS satellites circling the Earth. Some, like Mon, turn their movement into art. They call it GPS art or run art. Mon runs his design in one continuous line. Gary Cordery, a bicyclist in Britain, keeps track of people doing GPS art around the world. Last year, he was inundated with COVID GPS art. This year, it's Ukraine.
To sit down before you go out and sketch something on a map and think, right, I'm going to run a marathon today, but in the shape of a polar bear or something, I think it's just adding another dimension.
Once a month over the past 7 years, Mon, a retired IT worker, has done one GPS art. Ideas come from daily life or from staring at the San Francisco map to see what comes to him. It might take 2 hours to create the route design.
To make sure that it doesn't go through any barriers, any walls or cliffs or highways or fences.
It helps, says Mon, that GPS is getting better, detecting which side of the street he is on, which helps with details. But he's not a perfectionist.
I know what I want it to look like, but how it turns out at the end, I'll never know until I finish it.
It's an art that relies on technology, careful planning, and imagination. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinadwa from Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In response to the tragic and brutal death of a young Iranian woman, Mahsa Amini, as well as the violent suppression of peaceful protests, Secretary of State Antony Blinken has announced sanctions against Iran's so-called morality police and senior security officials. 22-year-old Mahsa Amini was arrested in Tehran for purportedly wearing a hijab too loosely. She died while in custody of Iran's so-called morality police. Street patrols by the morality police in Iran intensified this summer. President Ibrahim Raisi had called for strict enforcement of laws imposed after the revolution in 1979 that obliged women to cover their hair and wear long, loose-fitting clothes. Protests throughout Iran erupted after Amini's death. They have been met with force by the authorities. The Iranian government's crackdown is ongoing. Authorities have reportedly killed dozens of protesters, and last week the Iranian government cut off access to the internet for most of the 80 million citizens to prevent them and the rest of the world from watching its ongoing violent crackdown on peaceful protesters. In a separate statement, the Treasury Department said the officials designated by the Office of Foreign Assets Control oversee organizations that routinely employ violence to suppress peaceful protests and members of Iran's civil society, political dissidents, women's rights activists, and members of the Baha'i community. The seven designated officials include Iran's Minister of Intelligence and Security, the head of Iran's Morality Police, and the head of its Tehran division. The sanctions also target the deputy commander of the Basij, the deputy commander of Iran's Law Enforcement Forces, the LEF, the LEF commander of Chahar Mahal and Bakhtiari province, and the commander of the Iranian Army's ground forces. These men have been involved in serious rights abuses, including violence against detainees and the use of deadly force against protesters. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen called the death of Mahsa Amini another act of brutality by the Iranian regime's security forces against its own people. She added, "We condemn this unconscionable act in the strongest terms and call on the Iranian government to end its violence against women and its ongoing violent crackdown on free expression and assembly." Today's actions, Secretary Yellen declared, demonstrates the Biden-Harris administration's clear commitment to stand up for human rights and the rights of women in Iran and globally.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.